Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. And joining me now is Kenneth Cole. Yes, that Kenneth Cole. But he's not here to talk about his shoes or clothes during this holiday shopping season. He's here on the occasion of World AIDS Day, which was yesterday, and a new HBO film which he produced about AMFAR, the American Foundation for AIDS Research. The film, premiering tonight on HBO, is called The Battle of AMFAR. And as you probably know, Kenneth Cole has long used his brand through billboards and other advertising to destigmatize and raise awareness about AIDS and HIV for decades now. So, Kenneth Cole, an honor to have you. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian. It's truly a privilege to be here this morning. Thank you.
So people who don't know the history, for them, AMFAR was founded by Dr. Matilda Krim, who was on the show when she was heading AMFAR, and the actress Elizabeth Taylor. We know who Elizabeth Taylor is. Where did Dr. Krim come from, and how did they team up?
So Dr. Krim is a very acclaimed scientist, actually originally from Switzerland, and she was studying cancer. She was doing a lot of cancer research at the time in the early 80s, and somehow she became compelled to want to focus and try to understand what was happening with this still unnamed virus that was afflicting all these individuals at the time, specifically in the gay community and then the Haitian community. And so she kind of refocused her resources at the time when the way few did and others wouldn't. And at the simultaneous, Elizabeth Taylor was also becoming very engaged and enraged over what was happening with the illness and eventual loss of her friend Rock Hudson. And so these two very extraordinary women on two different coasts equally became focused on trying to get their arms around what was causing this, what was behind this ominous dark cloud that kind of sat above all of us, and yet few wanted to talk about it because of the pervasive
stigma,
implications of stigma that was attached to anyone that did.
So here is a clip from the film of Elizabeth Taylor, circa 1980s, speaking at a news conference.
I must admit that I do not usually welcome the opportunity to speak to members of the media. However, it is indeed a privilege to be able to address such an important audience. AIDS is more than statistics. AIDS is prolonged physical and mental torment for many thousands of human beings. It is heart-rending confusion and despair. It is the confrontation of one's mortality, most often in the prime of life.
Gee, did the gauzy music play all through her news conference?
Did the music
play? I'm just kidding. That's from the film, the scoring of the film. Do you know what year that was?
That was in the mid-80s. I don't know it off the top of my head, Brian.
And but what impact do you think Elizabeth Taylor's attention, the attention of one of the biggest movie stars ever, to the HIV/AIDS problem had at that time?
It was significant. But you had somebody who had the ability to mobilize not just the press, but in turn these very important audiences, and in this case Washington, and the legislatures, and she had the ability to get people to focus their attention on issues in a very compelling way, as few could. And so she used her celebrity, and Dr. Krim brought very unique collection of thought leaders and people who were familiar with the science, who were intrigued by this still unnamed virus, and you had the two come together in a very unique and compelling way, and their focuses were different, but at the end of the day, they created something bigger than either of them individually, which came on to become known as AMFAR. And originally it was the American Foundation for AIDS Research. Today it's the Foundation for AIDS Research, in that it has a very much a global agenda.
And research is obviously the key word there. And I'm thinking about how AMFAR may have fit in to the bigger picture as it was being founded. So maybe you had groups like GMHC doing a lot of personal services, gay men's health crisis, when, you know, the disease was exploding in the community and beginning to become known. You had ACT UP working on the political level, and then AMFAR working to fund research. So I don't know if they are the only three legs of the stool, but three important legs of the stool going in different directions toward the same end.
There was, at the time, when I first got involved, it was in the mid-80s, and I think we had assessed that there was maybe 18 AIDS organizations in America, and their focus to a large degree was on treatment, care, education. AMFAR was pretty much alone in its focus on research, and it was presumed at that point that was the role of these of NIH and of these big institutions and universities that had unlimited resources, and it was always understood that that's where this sort of thing would be dealt with. But it wasn't, and it was very clumsy and very awkward and very politicized, and it would take 7 years to get a drug approved through the FDA in those days, and it would take years to finally get people mobilized behind an idea. So AMFAR comes along very creatively and innovatively, says, we're going to bring resources to bear virtually overnight to the degree you can show us that it's appropriate. And it carved its own place in this myriad of very, all very well-intended, very compassionate individuals with lots of resources, but not necessarily focused and allocated in the most effective way.
My guest is the designer Kenneth Cole, who's also chairman of AMFAR, the American Foundation for AIDS Research, on this 25th World AIDS Day, or as close as we can come to it, on a Monday through Friday show. It's always December 1st, so it was yesterday. Any questions, people? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or anything you want to say in conjunction with what Kenneth Cole has been talking about and the new film that premieres on HBO tonight that he produced called The Battle of AMFAR. Kenneth, do you think it's possible that we've destigmatized HIV too much to the point where young people aren't as afraid as they should be? We've seen some stats to the effect recently that, you know, seem to indicate that people aren't practicing safe sex as much as they should be.
You know, I don't think it's because we've destigmatized it. I think maybe because I think the stigma is still devastating. I think people just aren't aware of how devastating this virus is. And there is this sense of complacency, which is very startling, and it's very concerning. And we address that to some degree in the film. But people just, they just don't remember. They don't, there's no recollection of what this country went through, and in not that many years ago, but it is something that people just need to understand. There is still not a cure. Four individuals have been cured of AIDS, have been clinically cured of AIDS, and AMFAR, interestingly, played a role in each four, and it was each with a different process. But there is no mechanism in place to treat the 34 to 35 million people still living with the virus, and many of whom are going to die of AIDS unless and until there is. And the reality is a cure is necessary. A cure is only going to come from research. That's what AMFAR does. That's why I do what I do, and that's why all of us at AMFAR are as focused as we are.
And so let's talk about the research. What's the leading edge of HIV AIDS research now? I see that AMFAR is at least in part responsible for what's considered a big advance in the search for a cure. And maybe you want to talk about the Berlin patient, as this person is known, who seems to have been cured, and this discovery of a CCR5 co-receptor, any of that?
So this was a very unique circumstance. And there was a doctor in Berlin who was very resourceful and patient, and he had to do a, and he was intent on and needing to do a stem cell a blood transfusion of an individual who was suffering from cancer who also had HIV, and he chose to keep screening potential donors until he found one who had this specific mutation called CCR5 and mutation, and he finally found one, treated this individual, Timothy Brown, and Timothy, to as of this date, is has been clinically cured of AIDS, which means he's gone for an acceptable period of time without any drugs and no sign of the virus recurring. And there's been three other instances, but in which case they did not necessarily hold out for individuals with this mutation, but they applied the drugs differently. There was a child in Mississippi that you may have heard about, and then there was this Dr. Henrich at Harvard who recently treated two individuals, again, with AMFAR-funded resources. And so far, both of those patients are showing no sign of the virus recurring, which is significant, but it's not something that can be leveraged and applied to the 35 million people living with the virus. But right. There's significant learnings that obviously have come from this and will be applied in a lot of the research, cure research that AMFAR is currently doing.
And I wonder if part of the reason that there's a trend away from condoms and other safer sex techniques is that people think it's safe to sleep with HIV-positive men who are taking the antiretroviral drugs. But officials say that not all men on the drugs take them every day. Plus, there are other infectious diseases out there that can be transmitted. Hepatitis C is becoming more of an issue. So is that all part of what we should continue to talk about in the media, in your opinion? And people like you also talk about public figures committed to this, getting information out about, you know, what is a risk, what isn't a risk, even with somebody whose T cells are normal because they're on a drug or whatever?
People have to assume the worst case and hope for the best. That's pretty much a lesson in life. And I think people have to act responsibly and appropriately. And AIDS is a manageable chronic condition today, but that's if you have access to the drugs and the resources and the means, which is it's a big if, and everybody doesn't, and it's not without a cost, an emotional cost and a financial cost. And but the reality today is if people do act responsibly, then there's no reason that everybody, gay and straight, male or female, pregnant woman, unborn child, couldn't and shouldn't be able to keep themselves safe. But there's a big if, and that is that you have to act responsibly, and you have to have safe sex, and you have to do what you need to do. So,
and I think it's important to mention, too, that we think of the disease as manageable for many people if you can afford the meds. But, of course, that is a big if worldwide, particularly in developing countries. Yesterday was World AIDS Day. They call it World AIDS Day, which I think you were a leading voice in founding back 25 years ago. So do we need to talk in wholly different terms about AIDS and HIV when we're talking about the developing world than we're talking about New York City and the rest of America?
We do and we don't. I mean, stigma exists everywhere. The drugs are more accessible here than they are in Africa, for example, in some of the developing countries. And in Asia, for example, the drugs are available, but the public health institutions are not as accessible to administer the drugs. So the needs vary regionally, but the bigger story is the same, and the progress is so significant, Brian. I don't think anybody could have anticipated even 5 years ago that today would be where we are today, where everybody could essentially render themselves safe. But the amount of people contracting this virus, even in the United States, regardless of that, are are significant, and people, you know, they've taken some of this positive news and I guess, or the absence of news, and they've assumed that everything's okay, and it just isn't, and we're just not there. But with the will, the political will, and the allocation of resources, we could see a cure, not just in our lifetime, but way sooner than anybody could have possibly dreamed of. Shortly, just not that long ago.
We're going to wrap it up after I ask one more question of designer Kenneth Cole, who is also.
Can I, by the way, Brian, just put in a shameless plug, by the way? We're going to be showing the film at the 92nd Street Y, and I'm going to also have an interview with a few of us on December 13th. And we're going to show the film there, and we're going to do a Q&A there about it. We'll talk a little bit about the business behind the business. And also, just to remind everybody, tonight the film is being shown on HBO at 9 o'clock.
Which, of course, I was going to say, premieres tonight at 9 on HBO. The film is called The Battle of Amphar, and you said December 13th for 92nd Street Y, so that would be Friday night of this weekend, so something to look forward to. And let me just ask you one.
Actually, by the way, it's December 11th.
Oh, Wednesday.
That would help.
Wednesday. Don't come on the 13th or you will have missed it.
Otherwise, you'll read about it.
Before you go, do you approach fashion design differently depending on the economic times? So these past 4+ years post-crash, do you approach the creative process or the business differently in this economy as opposed to more boom-oriented years in terms of what people want to wear or any of that?
I think that the fashion industry is an amazing industry because it requires the allocation of every bit of your creative energies every day, and it's changing every few minutes. And what's fashion to me may not be to you, or maybe to you today may not be tomorrow. So it's always reinventing itself. So how do you creatively? And it's what we do with Amphar, taking certain business principles, some creative allocation of the way you go about what you do. At Amphar, by the way, one of the reasons Amphar has been so successful is because we put in place uniquely in this world of HIV/AIDS, and I don't know where else it's done, but I'm sure maybe it's probably done elsewhere, a consortium where we say to researchers, we'll fund you to the degree you are asking, maybe even to a greater degree, but the difference is you're going to have to share your knowledge through a consortium, which is typically it's just not done in that world. So everything typically in the past has been proprietary, whereas to the degree there's learnings, they keep it to themselves because the rewards are so significant. But here we say that so you don't have as much redundancy, and you have people learning from each other's efforts, and at the end of the day, moving much closer to applicable solutions. And that's what we're happening here. But in fashion, every day you're reinventing, recreating, reinvigorating, and it's so exciting because I get to kind of rethink, you know, how what makes sense and how to enable you to look as the way you want to look and use my resources as creatively as I can to help you do it.
Kenneth Cole, thanks so much for being on with us.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, we will have a call-in for immigrants as part of the Feet in Two Worlds project. You can start calling now about the things you carried with you to the United States when you came from your country of origin. What things did you bring? What did you leave behind? Why those? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. For immigrants from anywhere, what things did you carry with you to the United States, and what did you leave behind? 212-433-9692. We have some great stories from other folks to roll out as part of this Feet Into World project, and we will hear yours. Stay with us and call in.